Today's shiur is Masechta Bava Basra, Daf Kuf Samach Zayin, and we will begin on Daf Kuf Samach Zayin, Amud Aleph, three lines from the top. Teaches us the Gemara, Amar Abaye, Hayman, the boy, Lemechsi, Chsimis, Yodeh, Bebeidina. Somebody wants to certify or establish his signature in Beis Din. In other words, that whenever there will be a document that will come with his name on it and his signature on it, they'll be able to have of certification, verification of his name. So says the Gemara, Lelechse b'soif megilta. So the obvious thing to do is sign your name on a document, and they'll have that name on file in Beis Din. So says the Gemara, what he should not do is put his name at the bottom of a document, because he needs to be concerned. Dama mishkech la'achad. Maybe there'll be somebody who's not scrupulous. The kosev, and he'll write on the top of the page, the Masik Bey Zuze, he'll write that somebody owes money, he'll write, I owe money, with this person's signature. The Tanan and the Mishnah, we will learn, the Mitzvah Shem Adaf Kuf Ayin Hei Yom Abayis teaches us, Hoitzi Olov, Tzav Yadoi, if there's a document shown that says, Shuchayv Loi, that says, I owe you money, it has the full strength of a shtar, to the degree that it gave him mechasim nechayrim that he could collect with that, document at least money from the supposed loiva. The Rishonim point out that the Gemara Masechet Ksubos, there's a similar Gemara Masechet Ksubos, but the Gemara Masechet Ksubos says that when one is faced with such a situation, what he should do is he should write his name on a chaspa. A chaspa is a piece of earthenware. And like that, they'll be able to, that's not the type of documentation with which you could sign. So what is the halacha? Should you do it on the top of the page or this? So the simplest answer is that the Gemara is giving us two options. Either write on a chaspa, or write on the top on the page. The Ramban says that a chaspa, if the chaspa is always better, but the Gemara is saying that let's say somebody didn't know what to do, then the halacha is if he writes on a piece of paper, he should at least write it on the top. The tumim says there's a difference when somebody is doing this on his own accord or somebody's doing it by Beis Din telling him what to do. In the Tumim explains that Beis Din has a much higher level of responsibility to make sure that somebody should not end up doing the wrong thing. And therefore, chaspa is a much better approach than writing on top of the page. Because whenever you write on top of the page, we can't be 100% sure that's going to end up on the top of the page. And therefore, it's a much better advice, suggests the Gemara. That's what the Gemara is saying, that the better advice is to write it on Beis Din's going to tell him to write it on a chaspa, but if he's not there, the halacha is he may come to collect it. The Rishonim debate, if when we speak here about a signature, is the only way to establish one's signature through a signature, or can one establish one's handwriting and by that extrapolate that this is his signature? So some Rishonim say that you don't have to have a signature to establish a signature. The Mordechai and the Rosh disagree. And the Mordechai and the Grush both hold that the only way to establish a signature, that as we're learning in our shiur today, is with a signature. Just by comparing the way you write a name, that isn't the way to establish a signature. Says the Gemara, who bezvina? There was a person who was a tax collector. Dosl kamei dabaya omle. What he wanted to do, the muxin that we often find in Shas were not necessarily the most scrupulous people. And here we have such a situation, actually, where this muchas wanted to get Abaya to sign a piece of paper that he would be able to ultimately take advantage with. So he said, I'd like to see your handwriting. The kiosa rabbanon, when what I need your handwriting for is that apparently talmidim chachamim, talmidim of the yeshiva, were exempt of with tax, and they would have to bring a letter signed by Abaya, the Rosh Yeshiva, indicating that this was a student of the yeshiva and he's exempt from the tax. So I want to know that your signature wasn't forged. So I'll have your signature. I'll let them pass without paying any taxes. Achvale, so Abaya knew the Gemara that we just learned, and he signed his name, Bereish Megilta, on top of the piece of paper. By doing so, he was able to protect that nothing could be tampered with. Have a Kanagabe. So this Muchas kept on trying to push the paper down, that Abaya's name should not be on the top of the paper, that Abaya's name should be in the middle of the paper. To which Abaya said to him, Kfar Kodmach Rabbonan, Chazal already taught us that that's not the way you're going to be able to succeed. The Rabbonan already told us that we should sign on top of the paper because of people like you. What would be the halacha? Discussed the poskim, if somebody's name is on the top of a piece of paper, but it's at the end of the line. So now what we have to worry about is, it says on the top line of the piece of paper, I owe somebody whatever amount of money, and it says his signature right after it. So now he wrote on the top line, and so we're learning now that that's a good advice, but it turns out not to be such good advice. So there's a machloikis hapoiskim. The Rivam says that it would not, because he signed in the top line, which is, as we're learning in our shir, what Chazal want him to do. So if he signed on the top line, doing what Chazal wanted him to do, so therefore he will not be held responsible if this shtar is used against him. However, I saw that other Rishonim, Tosfos and the Rosh, disagree. And Tosfos and the Rosh take the approach that if he has it signed on the top line that and his name is afterwards, that the halacha is that it's a good shtar. And so is the opinion of the Shach. The Tumim disagrees. And the Tumim says, this person did what he was supposed to do by signing on the top line. And therefore, since he signed on the top line, if there's wording before that on the top line, it doesn't help. There's a very interesting story where in Yerushalayim, years ago, there was a piece of paper presented against the Talmud Chacham that this Talmud Chacham is signing that he owes a very significant amount of money. And his name is signed under it, in the middle of the page. So, as we learned in our Gemara, a person should never have that done. And there was a big question, and this Talmud Chacham saying, I didn't ever do this. What is the story? So what happened was, the question was brought to the Levush, and the Levush said that, I'd like to see this person, the supposed Loivis Sforum. And they brought him his Sforum, and he saw that when the person would have a Sefer, he would sign his name on the front, put his name on the front page of the Sefer. And therefore, he said, what must have happened is, you'll find that there's a Sefer that they're missing that page. And that person ripped out the page of that Sefer, and after he ripped out the page of the Sefer, he used it as a false IOU. Amar Abaya, Mitlas Vadeser. So now Abaya teaches us a new halacha. And that is the halacha if somebody is writing a document and he's writing the word Sholosh Arba till the word Eser, he should be careful. He shouldn't write that number at the end of a line because there may be a margin left at the end of the line. And the concern is Dilma Mazayif Akasif, somebody can add in some words. So you'll have the word Shalish, and he'll add in Yud Mem, and it'll become Shloishim. Arba will become Aboim. So by being careful not to write it that way, that he should be careful not to end up with such a situation. But says the Gemara, the Yisramele, and if such a situation comes up, that the way they're writing the shtar, and that's how this number comes at the end of the line, Nehedri Ledebure. What he should do is review that number many times in the shtar, Trey Tlasimni. He should have the number reviewed a number of times in the shtar. By doing so, a number of times, invariably, it will be once in the middle of the line, where that type of tampering will not be possible. And if that will be the case, people know, we've learned in the previous shiurim already, when the number is mentioned a few times in the shtar, Yad Baal Shtar Al Tachtoina, the malva is in the weaker position. And since the malva is in the weaker position, then he won't be able to collect the higher number. He will only be able to collect the lower number. The Ritva points out that the halacha is that this halacha is not by all letters. And it's also not when you write a Lashon Nekeva. It's if you write Shalosh. If you were to write the word Shloisha, there's no problem. And therefore, even though the Gemara says Mishloisha Vet Eser, it's not always the case. It matters how is the word spelled in the document. Moreover, the Paiskim say that even though we learned that we always look at what's the bottom of the shtar, but if there's a contradiction in the shtar, that's not something that's ignored, and that's a proof that there's something that we have to investigate. We're learning where somebody's name is on a document, not on the top line, not on a chaspa, and there's a concern that somebody in will fill in on top of it. What would be the halacha if somebody has just like a blank check with his name signed on it, and somebody comes with that blank check? Will that be a proof that he says, well, he gave me a blank check, he trusted me, that I should be able to say whatever is the amount that's owed is truly owed? The Tumim says that the halacha is that it can be considered something to collect with. The Tzois disagrees, and he says that a blank check, even though it has the signature, has no halachic meaning. The Rishonim debate, where somebody presented a document with a signature, and over the signature it says, I owe whatever amount of money, and the person presents it to the loiva, and the loiva says parati. So normally, the halacha, as the Gemara teaches us extensively in Masechta Ksubos, is that a person cannot claim parati. A person cannot claim that this was paid up in front of a shtar. You could only say mezuyif if it's not mekuyim. You can't say parati. But the Rishonim suggest, the Rif and the Rambam, say that even though normally a loiva doesn't have the right to say parati, in this type of a shtar, where there are no edim, then the loiva does have a right to say parati. The Poskim argue what is the halacha. The Shulchan Aruch paskins like the Rif and the Rambam, that even though normally a loiva has no right to say parati, in this case he does have such a right. The Ramah says that we can't just accept his claim of parati. The Ramah says ein l'dayin elamash ein avroyis, which I understand the Ramah to mean we have to really investigate the situation and then be able to make a determination. As says the Gemara, who davak sibay, if there was a document that said, I sold it to this person in my field, talis b'pabedisa. there's a paradise. There's a place where trees grow in middle of my feet, a middle of my garden. And the wording of the shtar was Tilsa Bapadisa. Uzzle, the person who bought the property and wanted to unfortunately cheat, what he did was Uzzle Makel Gava the base Ukari. He erased the extension of the base and the bottom of the base. Vishavya, and he made the base into a vav. And now it read, not that he was sold till Subapadisa, a third of the paradise, but rather it says, I sold him the Gina or Paradisa, the entire paradise. So says the Gemara, Asl Kamei Dabaya, this document was brought to Abaya. Amalei, and Abaya looked at this document, and he said, there's something wrong with this document. My Tama Ravach Lelahai Vav, why is there empty space between the Vav and the word Paradisa? So says the Gemara Kafsei, he took this person and he wanted to give him, the person who was presenting this shtar, he wanted to give him Malchus, and at that point, Voidei, he admitted that he had tampered the shtar. So Yad Rama says, why was Abai allowed to give him a Malchus? He says that we learn from here that whenever a Dayan sees that there's this type of tampering taking place, and he wants to prevent from this happening in the future, he's allowed to do what he needs to do. Namiri says that Abaya had no right to give him Malchus. This is not a situation where Malchus is in order. And since it's not a place where Malchus is in order, he had no right to give him Malchus. He only made him think that he's going to get Malchus, and that got him to admit. The Ritva says that what happened here was that he admitted. But why would have been the if he didn't minute, if he didn't admit, then he could have collected with the shtar. So asked Ritva, why when there's something not kosher in the shtar, could you collect with the shtar? Says the Ritva that it wasn't so obvious that there was tampering, and when not obvious that there was tampering, we have a shtar in front of us, then we have to assume it's a kosher shtar. And he quotes a Yerushalmi. He says a Yerushalmi, the fallback position, whenever we have a shtar, and we indeed have a question about the kashrus of the shtar, he says, unless we have definitive proof that there was tampering with the shtar, says the Ritva, we have to assume that the shtar is good. And he goes on to say that let's say we have letters written in the shtar, we accept that shtar as it is, and halachically, we don't even require kiyum. There are other rishonim that learn pshat in the Gemara, that what happened in this case of the Gemara is, as we explained, there was an erasure in the shtar. And as we've learned in our previous shiurim, when there's an erasure, when there's something erased in the shtar, that changes the entire halacha. And that's why Abaya had the right to take this very strong position. Indeed, if it was just a letter that doesn't look right, that wouldn't be a good enough reason to disqualify the shtar. Mm-hmm. Says the Gemara, another story. Hahu, there was a shtar to have a kosabei that somebody bought, Manas, Ruven, Veshimen, Ache. He bought the portion of a property that is owned by Reuven and Shimon, who are brothers. But they had a brother, Havlai Acha, the Shmei Achi. They also had a brother whose name was Achai. Ozel, so he went and he inserted a Vav. The Kosebe Vav, he put a Vav in before the word Achai. And now the Shtar reads, Veshavya V'Achai. And if that's the case, he bought the part that's not just owned by Reuven and Shimon, but he also bought the part of the property that's owned by Achai. Also came to Abaya, and this shtar was brought to Abaya. He looked at the shtar, and he had a question on the shtar. The vav of Achai looked like it was pressed in. And says the Gemara, again, he did as he did in the previous case. What he said was, Kafsei, he forced this person to tell him the truth. And at that point, he admitted that he had tampered with the shtar. Another story. Ha'u shtar dav chosmalei, Rava Rav Acha bar Rav Ada. The edim on the shtar were Rava Rav Acha bar Ada. Asla kamei the Rava, and the shtar was brought, presented to Rava. Amalei, Rava says, Deich simus yodi didehu, this is indeed my signature, me, he says there's something very wrong with the shtar, because I always showed great respect to Rav Acha bar Ada, and it doesn't make any sense that I would have signed on top before my name on top of his name. And says indeed what happened was Kafsei, at that point the person who presented the shtar was put off for Malkus, and he was either he was moider that indeed he had tampered. He was moider that he did indeed was tampered with the shtar. The Rishonim seem to point out that the question that they discuss, would Kiyum be required in this case? Because as we've learned in many situations, the only time that Kiyum can be required by Beis Din is when there's a proof, when they're saying Ziyuf. If he's not able to say Ziyuf, it's difficult. Amalei, so Rava Sabishlam did the Zayfta. So he asked, so obviously this was a case where you had forged my signature. But he asked the Gemara, he asked to this person, my signature apparently was something that you could forge. But the question that he asked, El de Rav Acha bar Ada de Rosas Yodei, Rav Acha bar Ada apparently had some sort of a condition that caused his hands to tremble. So how could you mimic the signature of a trembling hand? Amalei, he says, what I did was, Antchi Yadei Amatra, I put my hand over a string that's over the river. And I hold that, by holding that string, and the string shakes as you pass the river, and that's why my hand was traveling. Amalei, what he said was, Akam Azarnaka, I stood on top of a rolling pail, and as I stood on top of the rolling pail, the kosav I wrote, and that's why it came out like a trembling signature. Says the Mishnah, Kaisun Getlish, we could write a get for a husband, Afapi Shein Ishtayimai. We could write a get for, even though the wife is not there. So Taisus and the Ramban ask a question, why is this permissible? Why should we not be concerned that this couple have colluded together? Because the halacha is that even if a husband writes a get for his wife, we often discuss in Ashurim that the husband is entitled to eat the peiros of the nechsim alug, and that entitlement that the husband is allowed to eat the peiros of the nechsim alug continues until the get is actually given to her. So why should we not be concerned that he will write the get with today's date, and then he will not yet give the get to her, and in between he's going to sell the peiros of those nechsim alug to others because he's entitled to those peiros, and after he'll give the get to the wife will present the get to the people who bought those peiros and say that they had no right to eat the peiros because she was already divorced. And the nechsim alug were no longer his, when really they were still his. So one teretz that the Rishonim suggests, it's based on a Gemara Masechta B'Metzia, is that the lekuchas are not going to. The lekuchas have to be careful whenever they buy something to make sure that it's truly honest. Another teretz that the Rishonim give, which we have this concept in other places in Shas, ain derech adam lahagdam la'atzma davar ra. Yes, there may be some financial benefit to doing this, but a person to do this type of thing would have to be ready to write a get when he's not really ready to get divorced. And Chazal were not concerned that a person is going to do something like that prior to him being ready to get divorced. Because Chazal were not concerned, that's why we don't have to worry that they're going to make this kind of a conspiracy. The halacha is that when a woman gets divorced, the halacha is that the husband has to pay at the ksuba. And a woman who said that her husband divorced her and she's ready to write a receipt that she shouldn't be able to claim again and again that she was not paid the ksuba when she actually was. So we write her a shiver. So again, we write the shiver, we write the receipt on behalf of the wife, af b'shem bali ima, even though the husband is not there. So again, the question is, Tosfos asks, why don't we again be concerned that the woman is going to write the shiver, but she won't give it to her husband? She's going to sell the ksuba to somebody else who doesn't realize that she got paid her ksuba. And then she's going to give her husband the shiver. And when she'll get divorced, and the husband, and the person who bought the ksuba, is going to want to collect the ksuba, because now she's entitled to the ksuba, but she had sold the ksuba to that person, the husband will present the shiver too little, too late. So Rishonim, in answer to this question, quote a Gemara that we've learned many times. When somebody sells to somebody else a shtar choiv that's owed to him, if somebody owes me money and I sell that loan document to someone else, which the halacha, of course, allows me to do, so as we often explain in the Gemara, the halacha is that I could still be meichel that shtar choiv. And we often quote the explanation of Tosfos, the reason I may do so, because every obligation comes with it, a financial obligation, but also comes along with it of a physical, a moral obligation. And since those two obligations come together, the halacha teaches us that since those two obligations come together, we could separate, the financial obligation cannot be forgiven once I sold it. But the personal obligation can be forgiven. And since the personal obligation can be forgiven, that's why the buyer, anyway, is in a very, very weak position. However, the Sofer and the Edim who write a shtar get for a person have to know these people independently, because we have to be concerned that maybe this is somebody who's somebody just trying to set up another couple, that he's telling the cipher, this is the name of Ma'i, and this is my name, this is my wife's name, and he's just trying to hurt somebody else. Now the question is, who pays for the get? So says the Mishnah, Habal noises on a get. The halacha is that the husband should give the get. And of course the question is, normally, as we're going to see, the obligation is to one who benefits. But here, the woman is the one that benefits, because when she gets the get, she's going to get a ksuba. So the Rishonim answer that our Gemara is speaking about a situation where in kaisven ksuba, we often have that the ksuba obligation doesn't have to necessarily have a get. And therefore, since it doesn't have to have a written ksuba, and therefore, there's no benefit, there's not such a strong benefit. The Chasam Sofer in the Tshuva writes that in the time of the Mishnah, they would write in the get, Kedas Moshe Yisrael, and at the end of the get, they would write the words, Hakel Shor V'Kayim, as we learned in the Shir the other day, Daf Kuf Samach Beis. But says the Chasam Sofer, nowadays, we write at the get, Kedas Moshe Yisrael. And he explains why. Because, as we're going to learn in Mitzvah Shem in the Gemara, the get we just learned in the Mishnah, the husband's supposed to pay for the get. But we're going to learn in the Gemara that they reversed it, that the wife should pay for the get. So now we understand why we write Kedas Moshe Yisrael. What we're writing at the end of the get is that even though halachically the get should really be written with the husband paying for it, but this couple is following the minhagim that Chazal established. What is the minig that Chazal have established? Chazal have established a minig that the wife should pay for it. And to make it legitimate, we write into the get Kedas Moshe Yisrael. Continues the Mishnah. A loiva shows up and he says that I owe somebody money. I want to put it into a shtar. So he's only hurting himself, and therefore we're prepared to write the shtar. The Rishonim point out that it's not just enough that the loiva should show up and say that I write a shtar that I owe somebody money. He also has to say that I already received the money. The Ramban disagrees, and he says that even though he hasn't received the money, the halacha is we could write the shtar on his behalf. And really, this machlokes rishonim is connected to another machlokes rishonim. And that is we know that when you have a shtar chayv against you, it doesn't just obligate you, it also obligates your lekuchos. Are your lekuchos become obligated only if you actually received money? Or are your lekuchos not obligated until you actually receive the money? So if the halacha is that your lekuchos become obligated as soon as you write the shtar, so we understand the halacha here. But in a case where the lekuchos are not going to be obligated until they got the money, they have to know that the loiva got the money. However, says the Mishnah, Vein kaisvin lemalva ad shei loiva imoy. That we can't write for a malva that somebody owes a money unless the loiva says, yes, I owe the money. So of course the Rishonim say, isn't this an obvious halacha? So some Rishonim say it's just to give us the contrast, that for the loiva we would write such a shtar, for the malva we won't write a shtar. Another teretz that Rishonim suggests is that the Edom actually saw this loan take place, but the loiva never gave them direction to write the shtar. And the Mishnah is teaching us that just because you, Edom, saw the loan doesn't mean that you have a right to put it into a shtar unless you have permission from the loiva. Because maybe the loiva want, as we've learned many times, a milva alpeh is much weaker than a milva b'shtar, and maybe the loiva wanted it to remain just a milva alpeh, and that's why he specifically did not have it written as a milva b'shtar. Who pays for the loan? Says the Gemara of Aloiva Nosan Schar. It's the loiva that has to pay for the writing of the shtar, because he's the one that benefits from this, that he has a shtar, that he got the money he desperately needed. Says the Gemara, Kosh Nishtar L'Moicha, you could write a shtar on behalf of a seller, Apishen L'Keich Imoy, even though the buyer is not there. Because if the seller is agreeing that he sold the property, fantastic. However, in Kosh Nishtar L'Keich, we won't write a shtar on behalf of the buyer, At Shehei Moicha Imoy, unless the seller is there, because maybe he's just making this all up. Who's the one that pays for such a shtar? Says the Gemara V'Aloi V'Noisun Schar. Who's the one that pays for such a shtar? It's always assumed that the buyer is the one that pays, that benefits. And whenever somebody benefits, he's the one that has to pay for it. I actually saw a very interesting question. It used to be that there weren't like formal yeshivas. There were melamdim, people who taught students in their home. And there was a Rebbe who was teaching students, and he bought a clock to know what time it is, because he was being paid for the hours that he worked. And now a debate broke out between this Malamed, who wanted the father or fathers to pay and for the clock, and the father said, this is for your benefit. So there was a machlokes. The Truma Sedeshin said that the father should pay for the clock, because otherwise the Rebbe won't know how to teach. Others say it was the Rebbe, it was the Rebbe. He wants to know when his job begins and ends. And this is really a question that comes up in different situations when somebody is hired for a job. For example, somebody hires a cipher to do a job for them. Now, obviously, a cipher cannot write whatever he needs to write without paper and without ink, etc. And the question that the Paiskim discuss, can, when the cipher quoted a price, how does the halacha look at the price that was quoted? Does the halacha look at it that it's the cipher who quoted a price, and now becomes his obligation to pay for all of the expenses that he had in that's part of the price that he quoted? Or are the raw materials that he needs to be able to do his job not included in the price? The price only includes what the job he's getting for the job. Continues the Mishnah. Ein kaisen shtari erison. The shtari erison is when you have Baruch Hashem, Chos and Kala who are getting married, and they have to write a document. And in that document it says how much the Chosin's parents are going to provide, how much the Kala's parents are going to provide, or Nesu'in, which is the Ksuba. This has to be done. Ela Midas Shneim, they both have to pay. Because it has to be done only when both of them agree, because they're both gaining and losing in this document. Who pays for the shtar? Says the Mishnah, v'chosin noisin schar. The chosin pays the schar. So some Rishonim explain, because it's to his benefit that Baruch Hashem, he's getting a wife, he's going to be able to do the mitzvah of puravu. Other Rishonim explain that the kamashikon sishikonabala. So whatever the wife has is really going to become the chosin's, and that's why he should pay. Ein kaisen shtar rishus. If you hire a worker to be an oris, which we often have in shas, which means a sharecropper, or kablonis, where somebody is given a contractor, that can only be written el medash neim with both of them agreeing. From a kabel, the one who's getting the job, so he's benefiting that he's getting this position, nois neschar, he's the one that's benefiting, and since he's the one that's benefiting, he has to pay. Ein kaisen shtar beruren, the Gemara is going to explain extensively what this means, or komais bezdin, a psak that bezdin gives, el medashneim, only with the approval of both parties, v'shneim nois neschar, and they both have to pay for the writing of the document. Shimon Gamaliel Omer, for the two litigants, we write two separate documents. And each person pays for his own document. We learned in the Mishnah, he has to know them. So drills down the Gemara, what is the definition of my Ubavad Shem Akiran? Says the Gemara Amar Yehuda Barav. Uvad shemek shem ish beget. The cipher has to independently know the name of the husband who's asking the get should be written. And shem ish beshiver, and you have to know the name of the wife who's asking that the receipt that is being written. Says the Mar Yosef of Safra Rahav Barhuna, Rav Huna Bar Chinana, Vyasa Bay Gabayu, Vyasa Kamabailu, shem ish beget in. We only have to know the name of the husband. Shem ish aloy. We don't have to know the name of the wife. And furthermore, Shem Ish B'Shoiver, we only have to know the name of the wife in this receipt, Shem Ish Loi, but not the name of the husband. But ask the Gemara, why would that be fine? Lechish, maybe he'll write a get. The cipher knows the husband's name. And the husband will say to the cipher, my wife's name is whatever. And there's another man that has the same name as he, but his wife's name is not the same as this person who's giving the instructions. And since the cipher doesn't know, he's going to give it to the wrong woman. Or similarly, Zimna Azul Kasu Ishi Shaiver, the woman's going to write a receipt. V'yavil Gavr, the law of the law, and she's going to give it to a man that's not her husband, but she'll be able to cheat his wife because now he has a Shaiver. Amal Abaya, so Abaya says, Hachem Rav, Shema ish beget, v'udin l'shema isha. Shema ish b'shoi, v'udin l'shema ish. Of course, we have to write both names. Otherwise, we would have a serious concern. Of course, the Rishonim asked the question, so why didn't the Mishnah mention this? So, explains the Ramban, that what the Gemara is actually saying, that of course you have to write the name of the wife in the get. The chiddush is that you also have to, and that's his wife. The chiddush is that even the husband, you have to know, and so too vice versa. But ask the Gemara a new concern. Maybe there are two names, two people that have the same name, and their wives have the same name, and they'll give the get to the ruined couple. Maybe that type of a game will be played. If you have two couples that live in the same city that have the same names, the halacha is ein migashim es nashaseyim. They may not get divorced elzeh b'fnezeh when both couples are there. But ask the Gemara. So, fine. In this city, we know that there are two couples that have the same name. But let's be concerned, ask the Gemara, lechishtim ha'ozol ha'masachvita. Maybe he's going to go to a different city. Or masach lishmer b'yosef ben Shimon. He's going to tell everybody that his name is Yosef ben Shimon. Now everybody knows that's his name, the Kosev Gita, and they'll write a get based on that. And then he'll use it to give it to another woman who wants to get out of her marriage, and this is the way he should be able to, by doing this conspiracy with the man who has the same name as her husband's name. If there's a person that everybody knows that this is his name for 30 days, says the Gemara, v'lois chazik. But what happens lois chazik? A person's anxious to get a get, and he wasn't in the town 30 days. What do we do? Amar bai de kar lev ani. We just call out his name suddenly. And if we see that he answers, if it wasn't really his name, he wouldn't answer. Says the Gemara, that isn't a good approach, says Rav Zvid. Ramah b'ramusizar, a person who's a thief knows to watch out for this type of a situation. And since the person knows to watch out, this isn't a good test. Rav Yehuda HaChassid left the Tzavo saying his children should not get married if the father-in-law or the mother-in-law have the same name as the Chassan and Kala. The Chassam Seifer once said to a Chassan that was ready Shidduch or was getting engaged, that his name was the same name as his father-in-law. What he should do is add another name, and like that, it won't have the same name as his father-in-law. The Shiles of Chuvus Yeshuas Malka says that it's just not enough that he should add a name. He should do so publicly, in other words, be called up to the Sefer Torah, and not just be called up to the Sefer Torah with that new name, be use that name publicly for 30 days. And once it's publicized for 30 days, everybody will know. So the Yaris Tavash uses this Gemara to answer a great question. We know that it says in the Megillah that Esther was married to Mordechai. And because Esther was married to Mordechai, there was a big problem when she went and was married to Achashverosh. So ask the Yaris Tavash, why didn't Mordechai just divorce his wife, just divorce Esther, and solve that problem? So he answers, if we look in the Megillah, it says, Mordechai ben Yor ben Shimi. Why does the Pasuk have to mention all those generations? So he says that there were many people in the city where Mordechai lived that were called Mordechai ben Yor. And our Gemara says, and Shimi wasn't even his great-grandfather. It wasn't Mordechai ben Yor ben Shimi. Shimi was many generations earlier. But that's the way, and because there were so many people with Mordechai ben Yor, that's how Mordechai was identified. But that can't be done in a get. A get, if you want to write something, it has to be 100% accurate. So it turns out, he says, there were many people in the town that had the same name as Mordechai. Since there were many people in the town that had the same name as Mordechai, we have a real problem, because
if Mordechai is going to get divorced, our Gemara just said that if there are couples with the same name, they can't get divorced without each other. That would have publicized what's happening. Obviously, they didn't want to bring any publicity that Esther was Mordechai's wife, because that was exactly what they did not want Achashverosh to know. And that's why the option of Mordechai divorcing her was not a good option.